Welcome to episode 2 of Finding Cherry. I'm April Johnston. I first met Janice McKinney this past March, over St. Patrick's Day weekend. She wore a black and green plaid shirt for the occasion, the sleeves rolled to her elbows, revealing a collection of whimsical tattoos. There were delicate butterflies, vibrant blooms, and perching birds. But it was the simplest one that caught my eye. The number 41. She'd had it inked there only a few weeks earlier, shortly after the 40th anniversary of her daughter's disappearance. That daughter, Cherry Mahan, stepped off the school bus in front of Janice's house on February 22, 1985, and has never been seen again. But following that 40th anniversary, and with help from a quartet of friends she calls Cherry's Angels, the case was gaining renewed attention and momentum, and the answers that had always seemed so far away were suddenly within reach. Call it eternal hope or just wishing something into existence, but Janice felt so certain those answers would arrive before the 41st anniversary that she was willing to ink that belief on her body. And as you'll learn in today's episode, she may just be right. Before we dive in, if you haven't listened to episode 1 of this mini-series, please press pause now and go back. You'll want that background information to fully appreciate and follow this episode. For those who are caught up, let's talk about Cherry's Angels. These four women, sisters Bailey Gazinski, Alyssa Dietz, and Carly Gazinski, and Bailey's wife Tina Gazinski, have designated themselves the custodians of this long, cool, but never cold case. It's hard to pinpoint when the sisters first met Janice. She was always floating out there on the periphery of their lives from the time they were just kids. I'll let Alyssa explain their somewhat convoluted, but very Western Pennsylvania connection.
So Bill was married to Di, who was our Aunt Dee's sister-in-law. And so Bill was also best friends with our grandfather. His camp was right down the hill from ours. You know, he would take the kids bike riding. And so it was kind of always this story of, well, you know that Bill's niece went missing when she was little and they never found her. And so that was kind of our stranger danger type of talk that we had. And it was close and it was somebody we knew whose family was affected. We didn't know Cherry, but we knew Bill and we loved Bill. And yeah, it was just something we always knew.
About 5 years ago, around the time their grandmother died, the sisters found themselves getting to know Janice and quickly growing close to her. It was no accident. Bailey and Carly insist. They believe their grandmother orchestrated this relationship from beyond the grave, knowing the four of them would fill voids in each other's lives. And they have. Janice has become the grandmother they lost, and they have become the granddaughters Janice never got to have. Here's Carly, with Bailey jumping in at the end.
We went on a women's cruise for my mother's 50th birthday, and of course we were like, can't go on it without Janice. So Janice came, and it was her birthday, and we were in the elevator, and it hit midnight, and we were all screaming, Janice, Janice, and it was just like, this is a relationship that's gonna
last forever.
It was a very, I think about that memory all the time.
And ever since then, I mean, it's been history,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. We're together a very...
She's our family.
She's family, and... just like how she describes Cherry, I mean, we will go somewhere and we'll be like on our way out and we'll be like, we're going to be here for an hour because Janice has to talk to every single person she walks past. Like, she is very much...
She knows everyone and everybody, and I say it all the time, if you know Janice, you just love her.
To know her is to love her. Yeah. The most generous, giving person that you'll ever meet.
Given their closeness, it's not surprising that when Janice finally broke down last fall and admitted she'd become exhausted after 4 decades of searching for Cherry, It was Bailey, Alyssa, Carly, and Tina who heard her cries and offered to help carry the burden. Within just a few weeks, they built a Facebook page called Find Cherry Mahan, contacted police, and began planning a fundraiser that would end up luring hundreds of community members to the Saxonburg VFW on the 40th anniversary. Cherry's Angels are not the likeliest of investigators. They have no law enforcement background, and they're all too young to have known Cherry. Alyssa is the eldest sister, and she was born a full decade after Cherry went missing. But the case loomed over their childhoods. Part of that, of course, was knowing Bill. But part of it was seeing the effect it had on their mother, Christy. Christy was just a few years older than Cherry, and she remembers her disappearance vividly. The adults around her kept using this word, abduction. Christy was sure it meant taken and returned. When she realized the true definition, and that Cherry might never be coming home, she began sleeping on the floor of her parents' bedroom at night. That fear followed her into adulthood, and she taught her daughters what she called the family password. You couldn't talk to or go anywhere with anyone who didn't know it. Taking on this case has cast Cherry into a new role in the sisters' lives. She's no longer just a cautionary tale. She's a little girl, one who, as she did to so many in life, has absolutely charmed the sisters.
Clearly, we've never met Cherry, but I love this little girl. Like, she was just, her grin, she reminds me a lot of my younger sister. Just, she was so bad as a kid, Carly was. But she was so curious, and like, there's pictures of Cherry, and she has this like little smirk, and it's just like, oh, she got into trouble. Like, you could tell that she was just so carefree.
That was Bailey. She's the de facto leader of these angels. She likes to introduce herself as Janice's assistant. She's the one who handles all the phone calls, whether from the media or the community, and she keeps in regular contact. Very regular contact with Pennsylvania State Police Corporal Max DeLuca, who is currently the lead investigator on Cherry's case. You'll hear the sisters refer to DeLuca throughout this episode. He's been on Cherry's case for 7 years, and Janice calls him the best of the many investigators she's dealt with over the decades. While some of the others bristled when Janice asked questions or requested updates, DeLuca has always answered her inquiries, and maybe most telling, he seems to welcome the angels' help. Carly is the youngest sister, and the skeptic. She's the one who keeps the more conspiracy-minded angels in line. She's not afraid to ask the tough questions, or to point out flawed logic. Sisters-in-law Alyssa and Tina are the researchers. You'll hear from them a lot in this episode. They bravely take the deep, sometimes disturbing, late-night dives into Reddit and web sleuths. They've read and investigated every theory. They also run the Find Cherry Mahan Facebook page. Here's Alyssa.
I think initially, at least in my mind, it was, we just need to get people to care about it again at a level that they did 40 years ago. And we thought, you know, not that many people our age are focused on this. And what if we try to bring in social media? What if we try to make this in the public's eye again, not just, oh, 40 years, it's on the news, how sad, but like actual reminders, day in, day out, pictures of Cherry, you know, information about her, just trying to spark that like, oh, this is still unsolved. You know, what can I do to help? And so I really just came at it as like an awareness perspective. And then as we kept kind of diving into things, we realized like, oh, we can also help get people to come forward and give information they have. And it's kind of just skyrocketed from there.
In fact, people were eager to share their theories of the case. seemed like everyone in the online sleuthing community had one. They ranged from the completely implausible, Ted Bundy did it, and the resemblance to Anne Hathaway is too eerie to be a coincidence, to the more thorough and thoughtful. One that came up repeatedly involved investigators' earliest and most talked about lead, the van with the mountainscape mural on the side. Sightings of blue Dodge vans with porthole windows poured into the state police Butler barracks in the weeks after Cherry's disappearance. It turns out that vans matching that description weren't so uncommon in the late 70s and early 80s. A few sleuthers wondered if whoever drove the van behind Cherry's bus that day immediately had the mountainscape mural painted over, erasing the vehicle's most distinctive feature and allowing it to blend in. Others wondered if the van itself was just a red herring. What I haven't told you yet is that several children and that neighbor who watched Cherry exit the bus on the afternoon of February 22nd, they also saw a blue sedan parked in a nearby driveway. Perhaps, some have speculated, the culprit was actually in the car, not the van. Solid answers on that front felt elusive, so Alyssa and Tina moved on to another theory. This one posited by a Reddit user from Massachusetts. He'd spent years researching the cases of several missing girls in his area, and he came to believe those cases were all related. Not only that, but he suspected his neighbor was at the center of it, running a child sex ring, and that Cherry had been one of the victims. It all felt a little far-fetched, but Alyssa agreed to talk with him anyway.
Our kind of thought in this was we were going to go down any rabbit hole because we didn't want to just say, oh, this person's crazy, and not listen. And so we listened, and we listened.
You listened more. You were talking with this user for quite some time to help check out this.
And you know what? The more I talked to him, the more I realized he really cared. You know, he was a father himself. He was very did a lot of investigating himself of missing girls in the New England area. And how he believed that a lot of these cases that we had looked into were connected. And so he really thought that Cherry was also connected to these girls. And so there was a certain person who he believed was part of this. And, you know, we spent nights looking up his family and his record. We found him on Facebook, and then we found out that he had passed away under mysterious circumstances. And I honestly believe that some part of this story could be true. I just don't know that Cherry's connected to it. But some of the other cases definitely could have connection.
Agreed.
Just when they decided the lead was almost certainly a dead end, a woman who'd grown up in Massachusetts posted a message in a Facebook group, a claim that upended everything. Over the years, multiple women have come forward claiming to be Cherry Mahan. Most have had absentee parents and have known or remembered very little about their early childhoods. But they have birthdays close to Cherry's and share her dark hair and knowing grin. Janice has talked to nearly all of them, just in case. Once, many years ago now, she called off work for the entire weekend and drove the nearly 250 miles from Butler to Rochester, New York, to meet a college student whose first name was Cherry and whose last name was spelled M-A-H-O-N, off by just a single letter.
And when I met her, oh, she was the most beautiful young lady I've ever seen. She had long, curly hair. Cherry always wanted curly hair, but she never took care of her hair. Like, it took all she had to brush her hair. But I knew, and she knew at that time, but it just was nice to be involved with somebody. And we had such a good time. All her friends, they had this, I don't know, scavenger hunt, and I don't know. It was crazy. And I've kept in touch with her since that day.
In that case, and others, police were able to pretty quickly roll out a connection using Cherry's fingerprints, which were taken as part of a safety program at her elementary school just months before she disappeared. So Janice has learned not to hope too hard when someone claims to be her daughter. But when this woman from Massachusetts insisted she was Cherry in a Facebook post, shortly after an online sleuth suggested Cherry was abducted by the members of a Massachusetts-based child sex ring, it seemed like the pieces of an unlikely story were suddenly aligning. Except they weren't. Fingerprints, again, revealed the truth.
I truly do believe that she thought that it was a possibility. She wasn't after money. She wasn't after, you know, fame.
She went through some struggle in her life, for sure, to come to that conclusion.
Yes, and that she was from Massachusetts, and her family was never truthful with her, and she never felt like she belonged, and she reached out and basically said, like, what if I'm her?
And this was on Facebook, public posting, and that got lots of mixed reviews in the comment section.
Yeah. Why would you say that? She did talk to Janice directly.
She did. She was really respectful towards Janice.
She just wanted answers herself. And the way that I looked at it was she had a really bad childhood. And I think in her mind, she was like, what if I have this mother who loves me and who's been looking for me for 40 years? It was kind of a way to protect herself. But that story never checked out. I think she went and got fingerprinted.
Yeah.
She wasn't her.
But man, the facial structures.
Yes.
Did match up pretty well.
She resembled her. Yeah.
I think she's just a little too young also to be Cherry.
Yeah.
We discovered.
Yeah. But she lived in the region that this Reddit user had been talking about. And so, you know, at the time we were like, oh my gosh, is this actually it? Does he actually know, you know, was she taken away to Massachusetts and given to this cult? Like, it was wild.
Another wild theory that Alyssa and Tina felt obliged to explore was the biker gang. It's a favorite theory in the Saxonburg community. In the last episode, I mentioned that people believe Cherry's biological father, who was said to run with a biker gang, was somehow involved in her abduction. Janice never believed that, but she did wonder if someone close to him, perhaps a fellow gang member, may have been involved. Janice has been open in previous interviews that her pregnancy was the result of a sexual assault. What if, in some misguided attempt to shield him from that accusation, a friend of Cherry's biological father took the only proof of a sexual encounter, the 8-year-old girl whose life came from it.
They're prominent at the time, you know, especially in this area, from my understanding. And I think there's just some bad people, you know, that lived in the area. They're part of these gangs. So when we researched them, we're like, well, yeah, they're into some pretty heavy stuff as part of their initiation process, as part of just their presence in the community and maybe keeping people scared. And we're thinking maybe that's why people don't want to come forward. Maybe they feel threatened.
I mean, Tina and I did. We were reading articles posted in the 90s from the federal government about gangs in Western PA. And it was like breakdown of the different biker gangs, who their, like, what was their hierarchy? How did they operate? Where were their hideouts? And one hideout that we found was in Katanning. And there was a lot of draw toward Katanning when we were looking into things. And so that was kind of one of those moments where we were like, wait a second, could this be it? And I think that was the first time I felt scared.
Yeah.
Like,
you don't want to think, you know, there's these super terrible people, like, in your community.
Yeah. And, you know, if we get close to finding the answers, you know, is somebody going to retaliate? because people have been threatened in the community.
They like, also hey, told us, hey,
lay off the Cherry Mahan case.
Yeah.
Like, so that was the first time I remember us being like, ooh, like
we tread carefully.
Yeah, we need to be careful. But I feel like as we looked into it more, a lot of these biker gangs did not have crimes against kids. And so, you know, it was mostly drug related, prostitution, but not necessarily like murdering a kid for fun.
By this time, Alyssa and Tina were starting to get a bit rattled by the case. Alyssa has two kids, one a daughter with a spirited streak like Cherry. And all this research into child abductors and gang members was starting to feel too close, too real. She ended up teaching her children a family password, just like her mother had done all those years before. And it wasn't just Cherry's case that was haunting them, but other similar cases from the 80s and early 90s, some of which had been solved, and some, like Cherry's, that remain mysteries. What kept them going was knowing how their work was helping Janice.
I think she's been in fight or flight for, you know, since Cherry went missing. And not that she's ever been alone, but she's never, as far as we know, she's never had somebody, like Tina said, take away that burden.
Never.
And now it's like all the messages are not just going straight to her. You know, we can filter those out. The calls are not going straight to her. Because there are days where she can't deal with that. She can't process that. And things get missed. And, you know, messages with information get missed because it was only being seen by one person.
And that person has severe PTSD and trauma and can only handle so much.
Yes. And even, I think, communicating with the police as well. Like, that's a stressful thing to do. And, I mean, Janice has always been, like, she'll go up, she'll request to speak to the detective, but I think getting into that mindset of like, okay, here's my, you know, 300th time of asking for information, if there's any information. So I think now, like, Bailey's kind of taken on that role, and you know, all of the questions of course are coming through Janice, but at least Janice isn't having to go up there to have those conversations, and we can kind of be the middleman for her and advocate for her too.
One night last spring, feeling fresh out of leads, Bailey and Tina decided to comb through the Megan's Law website, looking for any child predators who lived in the area. One name seemed familiar, and his address was within miles of where Cherry went missing. Let's call him Charles, though that's not his real name. They suspected Charles was related to Janice's parents' old neighbors. Police had long ago looked into the father of this family, and for good reason. First, at least two generations of the family had been dogged by accusations of pedophilia. Second, this family was the one who started the rumor of Cherry's biological father and her stepfather selling her for drugs, which police knew to be completely unfounded. The Angels took their suspicions to Janice.
So, you know, Janice confirmed, like, yes, this person was part of that family. He was younger, though. He was a son of the people that were initially, you know, who we were looking at. And so Bailey reached out to the detective and asked, you know, I know that you had looked into this family before. Did you look into this person? And he said, yeah. He gave the name. You know, we talked to him. And she said, no, not him, his son. And then it was like silence.
It was radio silence.
On the last episode of Finding Cherry, Janice believes she knows who took her daughter, but she and the Angels will need more than just their suspicions and secondhand information from this man's family members if they want the truth. They'll need evidence. They'll need you. Many thanks to Janice, Bailey, and Carly, and especially to Alyssa and Tina, who painstakingly walked me through their research for this episode. Also, thanks to Joey Smith for cover art and David Smith for production help. Please see the show notes for more source information and music credits. And please, share this episode with everyone you know. Someone out there has the information that will finally get Janice the answers she deserves. Let's find that someone.